Hello and a very warm welcome to this Independence Day podcast under Network 18 and ITC's ongoing thought leadership campaign, Swabhiman Bharat, that highlights indigenous successes, seeks solutions, and creates influential conversations around Atmanirbharta. From Azad Bharat in 1947 to Atmanirbhar Bharat in 2021, what have been the major milestones and learnings? Let's find out. Joining me today on this special podcast, Sanjeev Sanyal, Principal Economic Advisor to the Government of India, an internationally acclaimed economist, urban theorist, and best-selling author. Welcome to Network 18, Mr. Sanyal.
Pleasure to be on your show.
My first question to you, I know it is a difficult ask to summarize a lifetime of social economy of a country like India, but let's give it a shot. Our GDP since the colonial times till about the 90s has been downhill, and we did see a resurgence only after that. What did we do right and where did we go wrong in the last 74 years?
Well, I mean, you would have thought that having become independent, our share in the world economy would begin rising. But the decline in our share of world GDP, which had started during the colonial period, continued for the first 50 years after independence. And, you know, we have to take cognizance of the fact it was due to essentially very short-sighted socialist economic policies. Right in the 50s, people like Rajaji were warning us that you would end up with a license permit Raj, which is precisely what happened. But what is even more shocking is after it had clearly failed in the 60s and 70s, we kept up with it all the way to 1991. Only in 1991 that we finally began to open up. And it's a process that we are continuing to do to, you know, 30 years later.
Your book, The Indian Renaissance, also opens to a statement that hails two calendar years as the most important ones, 1947 and 1991. And you have mentioned 1991 right now. And we also look at a behavior change in people. People behaved very differently in this new economy. How did that change and what exactly changed?
Future generations will read two major, dates of history from the 20th century, if they are reading Indian history. One will be 1947, when India became politically free, and 1991, when we began to get economically free, but I would argue more generally socially free as well. And the reason for that is very simple. Till 1991, we basically had a system where a tiny group of people, basically a small political elite and bureaucratic elite, essentially could tell everybody what to do with their lives, and not just on economic life, but even other parts of your life were basically run by this small elite. Now in 1991, things changed because, of course, the then Prime Minister Narasimha Rao and his Finance Minister Manmohan Singh began to open the economy up, they began to de-license, but it's not just one point. It's a start of a process. And even till today, many of the reforms we are doing are part of the reforms that were started in 1991. So in 1991 to 93, basically what we did was de-licensing. But subsequently, you saw major reforms happening under Prime Minister Vajpayee. And then in the last 7 years, huge amount of reforms, GST, Insolvency and Bankruptcy Code, and a whole bunch of host of other reforms that have been done in just the last 2 years, even despite COVID. So it's a process that we have got, and it's all about liberalizing this economy. And it's been a very successful step, so to speak, because our growth rate went up. We finally became an aspirational country.
That brings me to the question, when we talk about the present, can you summarize the government's roadmap for achieving a $5 trillion Atmanirbhar Bharat economy? What are the two, three key highlights that you can tell us about this plan?
I think the most important thing to recognize is that when we did the reforms in 1991, it was not because of intellectual change or, you know, the intellectuals of that time had suddenly changed their mind about the failures of the socialist system. What had happened was that the economy just collapsed. And so we had to change. Now, since then, we have done a whole bunch of reforms, mostly to open up the economy and withdraw the state from the things it should not do. And so here we find ourselves in 2021, where we have to some extent been able to open up the economy. We've finally got a new middle class. We have got a new emerging entrepreneurial class. But when what we now need to do is to, we have of course opened things up, but we have still not come to the place where we are self-confident of ourselves to engage with the rest of the world. I mean, there may be some sectors here and there, like in software or something, where we are world players, but basically we are still very tentative about the rest of the world. So remember, the key thing to remember about Atmanirbhar Bharat, when we are saying self-reliant, we are not talking about a return to pre-1991 import substitution. This Atmanirbharta is about being, about a having the self-confidence to stand up and engage with the rest of the world. So we want to be a part of the global supply chains. We want the world to bring FDI into India. We want global multinationals to invest here, but we also want Indian global multinationals to emerge and to invest in the rest of the world. So we basically want to be able to engage with the rest of the world, but we want to do it in our own terms. So that is what Atmanirbharta is about. And of course, this requires new reforms. And if you see, for example, we introduced something called the PLI scheme. That's a production-linked incentives. Now, that's a huge break intellectually for our policymakers. Why? Because till very recently, our policies in India were always somehow skewed toward discouraging scale. There is an inbuilt bias that everybody should somehow remain in their place, small, you know, scale, maybe doing something in India. We have now broken out of that and we are saying, you know, we've got to have big Indian companies. And to do that, we need scale. And that, therefore, the production incentive scheme is a unique scheme in Indian economic policy making, is that we are actually rewarding people for becoming global scale. So this is a mindset change, and Atmanirbharta is just part of that worldview, where we are saying that, look, let's go out there and try and be world class.
So you put a lot of emphasis on the Indian middle class in your writings and how they have shaped India's progress also on various fronts. Now, one of the reasons we are calling our campaign on Atmanirbharta as the Swabhiman Bharat campaign is because of the pride of the feeling of self-reliance and the feeling that it generates in the citizens of a nation. How do you see them contributing to Atmanirbhar Bharat? Do you see a behavior change? Do you see them taking risks? Where do you see this modern middle class?
You're absolutely right. In many of my writings, I talk a lot about the middle class, but specifically about the new middle class that has emerged since 1991. So this is the middle class whose parents or grandparents were not middle class till the reforms of 1991 happened. So till the 90s, the middle class that you had was a combination of the pre-independence colonial middle class that had carried on, and then some additions to that middle class that had happened during the socialist period through people who had maybe made their way up the bureaucracy or the public sector. So this was the middle class that existed till the 90s. Now, this middle class was not a risk-taking middle class. I mean, this, remember, this is a public sector-generated middle class or a traditional middle class from the pre-independence era. So this was not a self-confident middle class. And in many ways, after after liberalization, when the new middle class began to emerge because of, call centers, big people working in call centers, new companies began to do ultra entrepreneurial things. So this old middle class used to actually look down on the new middle class as being kind of crass and don't know how to eat with a fork and knife kind of thing. But this middle class has slowly but steadily become the dominant middle class. And I am actually a person who, I'm a big supporter of the middle class, because this is a middle class that's self-confident to itself. It doesn't care about which English accent it speaks on. It doesn't care about how well it can quote Shakespeare like the old middle class. This middle class wants to do dhanda. It wants to take risk. And so you can see them in every field. I mean, look, we just went through the Olympics. Look at the backgrounds of those who went and won those. They are first generation middle class themselves. I mean, on the back of their sports performance, they have gone from being from the working class to being middle class. So this is the class that I actually think is the real driver of economic growth, because they don't come with any baggage. They are willing to go out there and take on the world.
One often feels at times that a stumbling block for Atmanirbharta, especially on the domestic demand side, is the perception of quality or the lack of it. Don't you feel that the quest towards indigenization will succeed only when the best quality is delivered? So we need more world-class Indian resources. How do we go about building that?
You're absolutely right. Atmanirbharta is not about going back to the ambassador car. I have no intention of going back to the ambassador car or on all the shoddy products that used to be produced in India through the public sector system. That is not Atmanirbharta at all. That is, in fact, dependence of another kind. So I think when we talk about Atmanirbharta, we must talk about world class and leveraging ourselves to the pursuit of excellence. So that is why Atmanirbharta is entirely open, for example, to foreign direct investment. Or Atmanirbharta is entirely open to us competing in the rest of the world. It's not about hiding from the rest of the world at all. That was what is the pre-1991 worldview of import substitution. This Atmanirbharta is a self-confident Atmanirbharta. And when I'm saying we want to do the world's best, let me show you how we think about these things. Very often when something new comes, it can be expensive because it's quality. There is even today an inherent sort of bias in our system will say, oh, we are a poor country, therefore we must go for something shoddy. So, you know, if you try to upgrade, I remember when we were upgrading all our airports, the Delhi airport, Mumbai airport, we may be now proud of it. But when the first opened up, everybody said, oh my God, this is so elitist. Why are we going for the best?
In our Swabhiman Bharat campaign, we have tried to include the social and cultural aspects of Atmanirbharta as well, which cover sports, food, music, heritage, etc. Do you feel resilient economic growth is at the very heart of effective deployment of one's soft power resources? And how do we build global brands from it?
See, I have always been of the view that you can't have any one kind of excellence or power in a silo. Every country, every civilization that is pursuing excellence will do so in multiple fields. If you take, for example, the European Renaissance, European Renaissance wasn't just about art and culture. It was also about economic renaissance, scientific renaissance, and so on. So if you, any kind of sort of revival of India that we may be seeing right now cannot be done in a silo, and we are seeing that. I just talked about, you know, suddenly we are performing better in even Olympic sports, which we never did before. The same thing is true of, art, design, every other field. You go and look at some of the stuff that is done from the 1960s and 70s, and they are blatantly shoddy. I think at least in some areas, we are attempting to do better.
Let's talk pandemic. The pandemic's adverse effects on the economy are set to be felt for the next few years at least, and not just by us, but by the world. What, according to you, are the ways in which self-reliance is going to contribute to India's growth trajectory in a post-COVID world? And what are the lessons that we can learn at the moment moving on with our Atmanirbhar Bharat campaign?
See, there's no doubt that the pandemic was extremely disruptive to both our health as well as our economic systems. So like with the rest of the world, we have taken a knock. But I think in the end, we have also done a lot of changes and responses to that disruption. There's obviously the more immediate issue of managing the revival of the economy right now. And that is a demand revival part of the system that, you know, there's fiscal and monetary policies have been put in place to sort of wean our economy back to a better demand situation so that we can revive the economy. But longer term, the thing that will drive the economy is whether or not you're able to deal with the post-COVID world. Because remember, the post-COVID world is not a reinflation of the pre-COVID world. The post-COVID world will have its own technologies, its own supply chains, its own geopolitics. And so all of these things will mean that there are both problems and opportunities that will be brand new. And it's very difficult ex ante to be able to tell where they are. So what matters in the end is your economy flexible? Is your policy making flexible? Are you able to be efficient, to be globally competitive in this new world? And so if you have been watching what we have been doing in the last, even through this pandemic, we have been doing a large number of supply side measures. So in many ways, we have been quite unique in the world that India has been doing a lot of supply side measures. Every country has been doing demand side measures, so have we. But we have been doing a large number of supply side measures here. Some of them, of course, get more highlighted. But we have been doing a lot of nuts and bolts reforms. For example, we removed all the telecom related regulations on the BPO sector. We opened up the cartography sector. We have a new drone policy. So there's continuously structural changes that are being made. We, of course, removed the retrospective taxes as well, that whole thing. So what we are doing is basically smoothening out the system such that we get a competitive global economy. And for once, we are definitely seeing a response from that. So you're beginning to see, for example, large number of Indian unicorns emerge. The stock market is responding. After many, many years, you know, bricks and mortar industries like cement and steel are saying that they're going to invest. We have seen record FDI flowing into India, $81 billion in the last financial year, and we are likely to beat that this year. So there is a lot of things coming through, but that depends on us being able to continuously improve our efforts to keep ourselves as a competitive global economy. And Atmanirbharta in this context relates to us introspecting continuously making changes so that we can compete with the rest of the world and keep up with the rest of the world.
What is your own vision of a truly Atmanirbhar Bharat?
My idea of Atmanirbhar Bharat is a self-confident India that is able to leverage its inherent strengths, particularly our ability to innovate, take risks, do entrepreneurial things, and not just in business. We discussed earlier, the pursuit of excellence is a wider thing. We should be able to take risks in the fields of literature, in arts, in sports, in every other activity that human activity. And that is what I would say would be an Atmanirbhar Bharat. So the most important thing is we need a culture that encourages people to go out there and do stuff. And the sign that I would say that we are succeeding would be that the future generations of Indians, the most talented Indians, say that they want to be scientists, they want to be entrepreneurs, they want to be writers, sportsmen, and they don't. And rather than saying, you know, they want to join do UPSC exams, you know, the ultimate sign that a system is moribund is that the most talented people in that system want to be bureaucrats.
Parting thoughts, what would be your message to the nation on the occasion of Independence Day?
I think we are entering the next 25 years where India will be at its peak in many ways. Demographically, we will be in a good position. I think the geopolitical environment is likely to be in a good place. We've done 25 years of reforms, which will now hopefully we will begin to reap the benefit of that. And the time has come to do a new generation of reforms as well. You see, the last 25 years of reforms has been about the withdrawal of the Indian state. The next 25 years of reforms should be about making the Indian state do the things it should do. So all this while we're trying to get the government to stop doing the things it shouldn't do, we should now get the Indian government to do the things it should do. We need an efficient legal system. We need to focus on service delivery, particularly municipal services. We need administrative reforms. So I think these are the things that we should, policymakers, focus on.
Well, this was a wonderful interaction, Mr. Sanyal, one that leaves you feeling very proud and euphorically hopeful about things in the changing times. We do have our challenges post the pandemic, but a positive disruption only happens in a volatile world and out of the comfort zone. Thank you so much for giving us time.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Well, we will continue bringing to you in our Swabhiman series valuable insights about economic development, indigenous excellence, and stories of individuals and establishments that are invested in India's mission Atmanirbhar.